Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Welcome to Blue Jays Happy Hour, episode 123. I'm Nick Ashbourne, joined as always by Andrew Stoughton. And we are going to start things recording the morning after the Blue Jays home opener with a vibe check again. We don't do it every episode, but there's been a lot of vibe shifting since we last spoke. And I think this is a bit of an interesting moment because it seemed like it was all pessimism for a while there, and then, you know, kind of a feel-good home opener goes to show what a difference a single day can make.
Yeah, I mean, and game two against the Mariners may make a difference again, but after the first game, obviously the home opener, I think people are feeling pretty good. I think people got some stuff off their chest, booing Guillermo Martinez for some reason, and John Schneider, I think, for more reason than the more understandable reason. You know, they saw the team actually hit a bit. They saw David Schneider play, which is something, you know, everybody has been who doesn't really care about, you know, the way that the Jays are building matchups and looking at swing paths and handedness and all that. Nobody cares about. They're like, he's like the one guy going, so play him. And they did, and it worked out. And hopefully we'll, because, you know, I mean, as much as I understand the matchups and stuff too, I'm in the, I think you probably got to play David Schneider more camp. But yeah, it was good. The ballpark looked good. The empty seats by the end of the game and behind the telecast, you know, we can maybe get into that at some point, but that was less good. But yeah, just a nice night to be reminded of what this thing is and how cool it is that the ballpark, you know, has seats that face the right way now and some good things. And to get a win in it, I think, really made a huge difference, because that's, you know, that's what we're here for. That's what everybody is dying for, and some runs and a lead and like a comfortable game in the direction of the Blue Jays winning, which has not happened enough either.
Yeah. And also from the offensive perspective, it's not just they score some runs, but you get it from Vladdy and from Bo, which we haven't seen yet. And I'm not saying that anyone's worried about Bo, but it's just something that fans want to see. It's like, okay, these guys are delivering. And then David Schneider, who, you know, is a little bit of a folk hero at this point, being a guy who delivered. And to be honest, I'm not the person who's most inclined to zero in on one game and be like, this is unbelievable from this one guy, and therefore he's a different person or anything. But I really, really liked what I saw from David Schneider at the plate in that game. Like, we think of him as being such an all or nothing hitter, like someone who's trying to do the Danny Jansen thing and just yank everything in the air, which has served him well thus far and is not necessarily a bad thing. But the swings he put on both of his hits are not the kind of swings we've seen from him in the past. And he's not necessarily going to live on blooping things and putting things the opposite way. But the fact that maybe that's a little bit more in his bag this season than it was in the past, and we'll see what happens there. But being able to, in difficult situations, kind of compromise the, you know, the raw power ambition of his swing to make some of that happen really impressed me. So yeah, the whole package was good. Another good start from Jose Berríos. Mm-hmm. It should be noted that he's got an ERA in the ones and like an expected ERA in the sixes right now. you probably would want to see him strike out a few more guys, but you know, the perception of him being a single starter the team can trust is really nice. I do want to zoom in on the ballpark changes a little bit. You know, neither you or I were at this game, so this is us talking about our impressions based on what we've heard and based on what we saw in the broadcast. I'm going to be down on Saturday actually doing some Jays Talk stuff, so maybe next time we have a podcast, I'll have some kind of greater insight. I saw tweets about Dr. Pepper being in the press box.
It's the sort
of thing
yeah.
that I could not possibly care less about, and I promise you that the podcast won't be me talking about press box amenities. But if I have any impressions, I'll share them. But we, you know, we saw it on TV and they described a lot of what went on. My first impression, unfortunately, is a bit of a negative one, which was I don't like the way the backstop looks as much as it did in previous years. And that's part of that is the advertising and the fact that we're seeing, you know, the amount of double lime or Bud Light double lime, whatever they want to call this putrid drink. And I say putrid having not tasted it, but also being 100% confident that it's putrid. Like just the color of that is brutal. But then the screen, you know, when you're watching on TV, it goes down to the bottom, which I don't know. There's something a bit off-putting about that. And then behind the plate, you're seeing the gray walls with the, you know, the TD logos, and it looks kind of like a low-rent garden center to me a bit behind the plate, which is not the ideal experience. I will say that whenever it comes to things like this, we all get used to them, and then in a couple of weeks it's like absolutely fine and no one cares anymore. But this is the moment where we get to do some complaining, and like you referenced before, like the positive is the sight lines are clearly way better.
Yeah, I think that's going to be a huge improvement. Speaking as someone who sat down in those corners a whole lot of times in my lifetime before they fixed them here. So that's going to be huge. I think, you know, yeah, we could talk. I mean, talking about the TV broadcast, obviously, that's the way most people are going to experience, like the vast majority of people are going to experience watching Jays games anyway. And yeah, I saw people, they didn't like the lines of the gray brick and how it sort of contrasted with some of the meshing of the net back there. I will say that the framing is a bit weird. Like it's kind of zoomed out compared to where it was to fit in the ads better, which I'm not surprised by. I mean, it's now like the lower bowl is like the rich guy zone, and the we're trying to make dollars, you know, where our hands are firmly in your pocket kind of zone. So that doesn't surprise me, but you know, I noticed, you know, especially from like screen capping it, which I did, it was a little askew, right? Like if you look at where that gray wall starts on the left side of the frame and where it, or you know, where how much of what's above it is visible on the right side of the frame, it's a little tilted. I would love to see them get that fixed because that's going to drive me up the wall. But yeah, I think you're right. It did look better with different color schemes. Like the green and the bluer ads looked better than like the blaring red ones. I don't know. I'm just glad it's not. I mean, there are some parks, I don't know if it's Texas or Colorado, there's somewhere it's like the people who are in behind are much more visible, and you can see their legs and stuff. I think they did a pretty decent job of, at least, you know, for TV, you're not going to be distracted by the people behind there. You know, home plate lady's a little shifted in her seat by the looks of things, which is, I guess, a disappointment to some. But yeah, I thought that it looked fine. I completely understand the nitpicking at anybody's complaints, but I do think we'll get used to it. Man, the less red in there, the better, though, for me.
Yeah,
and also those TD things are, like, the neon green is, it does draw your eye a bit more than I'd like it to as well.
Yeah, it is odd that, I get it, because, you know, TDs, you know, it's a big bank in the city, and it wants to sponsor sports teams and stuff, but the coloring of TD doesn't go with anything to do with Toronto sports. Like, it always looks wrong. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, that is nobody's fault. The other thing about the changes that were notable was you really noticed how foul territory had been shrunk. And I don't think anyone is going to possibly be against that, right? Like it's something that encourages offense, which we know was an issue at the ballpark last season. I don't think we have a firm answer on why it played like such a pitcher's park, but I don't think that's what people want. They want something that's at least neutral. Having guys catch balls in foul territory is one of the least exciting plays in baseball. I mean, you have the occasional one where someone kind of dives into the crowd, but the meshing to protect the people in the audience has changed that a little bit. Like you don't have the same level of that anymore. I don't know, like that struck me as a kind of unambiguous positive that we have these little lines that there's just less room for people to make those plays that I don't think anyone's excited about. Although I will say when you have that in the corner and like really down the line, it gets super thin. It's occasionally difficult to tell what's going on initially on the broadcast, but I think that's a small price to pay for not having like the Oakland Athletic or Tampa Bay Ray problem where a bunch of outs are just happening on balls that are going out of play in most parks.
Yeah, I think that's true. I think the corners, you know, it's nice that the fans aren't right there, I think, anymore. I mean, that would be the site of most of the fan interference. I mean, there's still places where they could touch a ball in play, but I think it'll be more difficult. And that's, I mean, I'm not going to miss getting mad at those people because they should know better, but probably better for the product in the long run. And you're right, it is the lack of federal territory. Absolutely, like what complaint would there be there? And the corners are a little trickier for the broadcast. You know, not a lot of space down there for the outfielders, but I'm entirely fine with that. With that setup as well, and especially because it has helped it. It feeds back into the sidelines thing and how they've been able to reorient the seats down there to actually face, you know, the mound and the infield.
The other thing I want to go into with the ballpark and the ballpark experience coming out of opening day, I think we do this most years. Normally, we'll do this a little bit earlier before the season starts, but we got off to a little bit of a late start. So you get those announcements on the new food items. And this is not, you know, a food appreciation podcast per se, but it is a big part of the ballpark experience. And also, you know, it's become sometimes internet iconic, the type of things that they come up with. And I think that Rogers Center for quite some time has been looking for that kind of signature dish. And I'm not sure they found it this year. So we're going to quickly run through the new items. This is according to press releases, and I think there was an article about it at the Toronto Star. So this is what I've dug up. There may be some other ones out there. If we see something in the wild, maybe we'll circle back. But Stone, we're going to go quick, you know, kind of on an eat to would not eat spectrum, but with any additional comments, I suppose. The first one I saw was a hot maple and bacon dog. So this is marinated in rosewood honey, their words, not mine. Topped with candy, maple bacon chips, and garlic aioli in a soft bun. This is the, I think, you know, kind of attempt two, right? To make a hot dog that matters. The first one was the poutine dog last year. I don't know. Did you dabble in that at all?
I did not. I'll grab some loony dogs, but that's about as far as I go. Just the basics, you know?
Yeah. See, it struck me as a product that was going to be, I mean, first just kind of that general grossness, but just incredibly salty too. Like a hot dog against the gravy of poutine did not seem like a good idea. This sounds.
If I may add, also like as a bearded man, like a hot dog with sloppy, like stuff piled all over it is like just too much of a chore. So the poutine dog was never going to be the one to win me over.
I think that that's a good call. As someone who's sort of intermittently bearded, I can definitely relate to that. And if I had to guess about our demographics in terms of listenership, our constituency, I would assume that there's a decent amount of beards in the mix. We don't get data on that, but I'm going to go ahead and guess. Stone, the hot maple and bacon dog, it looks like they're going a little bit higher rent on it. Is it something that you would consider?
I would absolutely try that. Yeah. I mean, like maple, I get, yeah, Canada, that's our thing, I guess. Quebec's got all them, all those syrup rations. We got it on the flag. I can give or take maple. I can live without maple or whatever, but, sure. Bacon on a dog, candied bacon. I'd give that a go. That's Scran.
I also like, you know, the garlic aioli. We all know aioli is just mayonnaise. But I'm not a huge True. Mustard or ketchup person in theory, so it's good to have a hot dog that has kind of an additional option for me. The second hot dog on the list is the Mediterranean hot dog. This one, there was some level of ambiguity for me because all it said was featuring beef shawarma and tzatziki on a ballpark classic. So are we getting kind of just shaved beef on top of the hot dog itself, or was the hot dog made of beef shawarma? I assume you're getting kind of beef shawarma on top of the hot dog and tzatziki. And if that's the case, I really like this idea.
Fair enough. I mean, yeah, you need ambiguity because the Mediterranean is a large body of water. You could pick many places and say it's Mediterranean. But yeah, that sounds fine to me. I would probably pick the maple bacon one first, but yeah, give me that yogurty tangy sauce. Oh man, I don't want to, like, I'm gonna reveal my lack of depth in foodstuffs if we go too hard on this. But well, yeah, no, that sounds fine too.
I don't think this is gonna test our culinary boundaries here. Like, I don't think that the Rogers Center has reached. Maybe in some of these private boxes that you or I know nothing about, there's some incredible things getting eaten. But I'm talking about what's available to the public. Yeah, I would pick this over hot maple and bacon, but I think it's a toss-up either way. Both are valid. The next one, I'm not
I see them. I hear them.
I'm not sure this is valid. So this one was stuffed Jamaican patties filled with jerk chicken, coleslaw, and barbecue sauce. One thing that bothered me, and like, I'm not going to go to bat for the Jamaican community because it's not for me to do, but I will say, I saw an article, it's like, in the last 2 years, this trend of Jamaican patties in Toronto, I'm like, what are we talking about here? Like, this is, anyway, this is something that it didn't just crop up, guys. The other thing that bothers me about it is the barbecue sauce component, which has not been a part of Jamaican patties that I have been familiar with in the past. It seems like they're chasing a quote unquote trend that's been going on, forever. It's an extremely well-established dish, is not a trend, and they're potentially butchering it. Like, I don't know what there is to, it might taste decent, like jerk chicken, barbecue sauce. Like, it's probably taste all right. It just seems odd to me.
Yeah. I'm with you on that. I'm also with you on I can't speak for what is or is not a properly authentic Jamaican patty, but even coleslaw, is that a thing we do? Barbecue sauce.
I guess that's why they're calling it stuffed, I guess. Patty plus, but just give me.
I would
the
prefer
original.
They just do one really well. Do the best the best most normal one you can do. Just make it as good as possible. There are, lots of local options for stuff like that, which is something that I know was talked about a long time ago when they were starting to talk about the Rogers Center renovations, and even before that in the Beeston days, and about trying to get grass and do something with the building, which was obviously like starting to get to a point where they had to think about doing these things. And I think they did seem to make, and maybe they have more partnerships with local spots than I'm recognizing here. Maybe this is one. I don't even know, but it is a world class food city, from what I understand. So there was a lot to draw on, and not necessarily just copy, but actually let people who are really good at it do it.
Yeah, they always
that'd be my thing.
The phrase is "let someone cook." In this case, it's literal. Like, just let them cook.
Yeah,
let the people who know how to do this do this. Also, I just don't think that Jamaican patties are a very inaccessible food, even if you're not from that community or it's not something you're familiar with. It's pretty easy to comprehend,
There are tons of convenience stores and
stuff. Yeah, just like meat inside, pastry. Like, people can approach it. We don't need to change it and make it seem, I don't know. Anyway, next on the list is two bite cannolis. Crispy shells, thin coating of chocolate ganache on the inside filled with not too sweet mascarpone, and a dusting of crushed pistachios. This does feel a little bit, I don't know if ambitious is the right word. It doesn't have much of a ballpark feel, but I'm not against it. I like a cannoli.
Yeah, that'll go to the sushi seats. I am against it, but only because I would go into anaphylactic shock, so I can't can't eat that one.
That's fair. I
I like breathing.
Came to cannolis late in my life because I got them for the first time when I sat down. I'm like, I'm gonna finally watch The Godfather because I had not done it.
No, wow.
And I got some cannolis to do that. and I, there are probably people listening who are gonna lose a lot of respect for me here with what I say next. But I fell asleep. And I'm gonna blame that on the cannolis. So watch out with cannolis; they can put you to sleep.
It's 3 hours. I get it, but it kind of is gripping. But no, you're good. It's okay. Cannolis. All right. Well, we'll give them the one thumb up, and I'll take a pass on that because I can't objectively really answer.
Next up, this is, I don't think we need to spend too much time here. We got a loaded mac and cheese incoming, and it's loaded with either brisket or jerk chicken. This seems like a natural thing to do. You know, mac and cheese is not Canadian per se, but, you know, we love our craft dinner, and then, you know, throwing some meat in there, meat does not clash with cheese and noodles, in my opinion.
No, this is true. Though I will say, thinking back to the Jamaican patty, I mean, like, that's at least, that's easier to handle at your seat. You know, you ever get, like, a mac and cheese, now you're getting that little wooden fork or something, and that can be difficult, especially depending on how loaded it is. I don't need all these toppings on my mac and cheese. This used to be a country where just the mac and cheese was fine enough. I'll put jerk chicken or brisket on there. Yeah, like, giddy up, that's fine too.
I don't think this will actually happen, but if the jerk chicken had some real kick to it, the way that would complement the creaminess of the mac and cheese would be really good. But I suspect that the jerk chicken you're getting at Rogers Center is not going to be spicy enough to make that flavor complement come together. Last thing I had on the list, I just wanted to flag this, not because of the food concept, but because of the name, because it sounded really stupid to me, and that was snow fries with Parmesan dusting. Sure, fries are cool. I guess when you put Parmesan on it, some people might feel that the ability to eat it with your hands is compromised slightly, but I don't think anyone is too opposed to fries and cheese. It just, I don't know why you had to give it a silly name.
Yeah, Parmesan's not the most snow-like substance among the foodstuffs, right? I don't know. There's some powdered sugar. There's some things that evoke snow better. So that's a miss there.
I think powdered sugar on fries.
I'm not advocating that. I'm just saying that the Parmesan does not make me think snow. But I don't know. Put them on your fries, sure. You get that gar parm. I don't know.
Also. Yeah. You see a lot of the, you know, quote unquote Greek fries in the city with the feta on it. I think that's like a more well-established premise, and you could, you know, again, give some representation to the many things around the city, have a little Greek thing going on with the feta. And I think they put some other spices on that. It's not bad. That's what I would have preferred. I think the big question coming out of this is Rogers Center still missing that, like, one thing, the one default option for people, or is the idea, which I think is what they're trying to do, you could argue about how successful they are, is to say, you know, Toronto's this incredible diverse city with all these different foods, and we're going to try and make sure there's all kinds of different things for all kinds of different tastes, and we're going to showcase the city in that way. Like, do you think that's working, or I guess the other part of that is, like, is the iconic Rogers Center item the loony dog at the end of the day, even though it tastes terrible probably compared to any of these?
I mean, that's probably true that it might be the loony dog. I mean, that's the one, even though they do talk about these things all the time on the broadcast, I mean, it's like a dedicated every, you know, twice a month, it's like the broadcast is the loony dog broadcast. And, you know, that's the one that more people will say to me, like, yeah, we got to go down for one of them loony dog nights. And it's not, let's have this, you know, maple bacon dog, or whatever else. Nobody's talking about the Mediterranean dog. You know, I don't know. I'm not plugged in enough these days to really say if there is, you know, the Instagrammable food that really is caught on or anything. I know that is a thing that people are chasing, that businesses and brands are chasing. I think there's room for improvement here. But some of these, I don't know, they. We managed to wring 10 or 12 minutes out of it. So good for them, I think.
If they give us some content, then they've succeeded, I guess.
We didn't talk about how bad the Blue Jays were before last night for quite some time.
And
so
we will get there. You know, it's only 23 minutes into the show at this point. But I guess at the end of the day, you're right. There isn't probably that iconic individual item that people are going to throw on Instagram. But I will say the overall quality has improved a ton over the last, I don't know how many years you want to call it at this point, because it is very easy to recall a time when going to Rogers Center meant, like, not loony, but not satisfying hot dog and or like maybe chicken strips or the nachos with the kind of terrifying plasticky cheese goop.
That is absolutely true. I mean, also a hot tip. I don't know. I guess you don't need any. It was a old Spadina. You ask for, you know, especially if you're in the 500s, you can get. That was a good tip to sneak down to the 100 level. I doubt any of this works anymore. So be like, no, I need a kosher dog and go to Old Spadina. Better dogs. I worked there for like parts of the summer in the Carlos Delgado area, carrying a big metal box up and down the stands, yelling pure beef hot dogs here. Real high point of my life, but I did get to watch a bunch of ball games and smell like hot dogs for days. So shouts to my pals who are, if anyone's still there from 20 years ago. That was a good dog, but the standard stadium one's not ideal. And you're right, it has really improved a bit. Though also, if we're going back, I miss those McDonald's days when we first opened up and there was like the McDonald's in the dome.
But before we move off of this, I do need to know if you had any particular tactics for selling, because I know the guys who sell beer have all these like tips and tricks and whatnot, because they're trying to move beer and getting their tips is how they make their money. I'm not sure the hot dog game is quite the same in that regard, but from those days, did you have any like stratagems for slinging those dogs, or was it not really that important to you how many dogs got sold?
No, I mean, the tips were important, but also, I mean, there's only so much you can do. You're out here yelling pure beef hot dogs here, get your hot dogs. I don't know how much more appealing you can make it. Also, it didn't last super long because I think the company believed that because they had a stand in the Rogers Center, they could just have somebody walk around and sell them anywhere on the premises, which they found out eventually was not the case. And so they're like, oh, why don't you just work behind the rollers for 4 hours every night of your stupid life, which didn't, which sort of, when I couldn't see the ball game, made it less appealing as a part-time job that did not, you know, pay me nearly enough in the first place. I'm sure it's wonderful now. Lovely people, had a nice time. But yeah, no tips. But yeah, it was like a box with it had a candle in it to keep the dogs warm and in water on one side. And then all it was a pain in the ass. Not worth it.
All right. Now we're well past the 25.
Get your own
mark.
Damn hot dog.
We can engage a little bit with the Toronto Blue Jays as a baseball team.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
And one thing that I don't think people thought was likely coming into the season was the idea that this was a rotation that you might have to worry about. Now, I think we all understood that the performance they got in 2023 wasn't something that was going to be easy to replicate by any stretch of the imagination. But at the same time, you still had guys with a track record of durability and for the most part success. And then you had a couple interesting wild cards at the back with Manoah and Yariel Rodriguez. When you think about the concerns that have arisen since the season began, is it Gausman and what we just saw? Is it Bowden Francis' ability to hold up in this rotation? Or is it like what we recently saw from Alec Manoah in the minors that would cause you the most consternation if you're the Blue Jays?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, it was like Shai and Keegan pointed out that Gausman had a very similar second start last year. That is still absolutely a concern, because, you know, more so than if Bassett disappears for a bit or if Bassett isn't the guy that we expect him to be, That's I think was more manageable because, you know, Gosman is Gosman. And yet I kind of have more of a confidence level there. I'm not jumping off the Chris Bassett bandwagon. You know, I think he did really well last year and battled at times and, you know, had a really tough first start himself and was able to put it together. And especially in the second half, had a really nice year. I think that's all obviously still in play. He's maybe the one I'm a little more concerned on just because he's got a lot of innings on that arm. He's a bit older. And he's just not coming from like the stuff level. So, you know, the margins are probably just a little bit thinner. You know, Francis, I think Ariel Rodriguez has been encouraging enough, and they seem to be willing to let him, you know, throw innings at this point, even though he didn't pitch competitively at all. I mean, he had been a proper stretched out starter before. So, I guess it's not the same kind of concern as it would be with, you know, a 21-year-old kid like a Ricky Tiedemann, but, his performances in AAA so far and what, you know, the reports you're getting on his stuff make me no less worried about the other two guys, like looking at as the fifth starter option. So I think it's Bassett for me that would be, if he has another clunker, then you start to maybe start sweating or thinking about it at this point.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I mean, Gosman, it's really like one more start, right? Like if he comes out in his next start and it's the same stuff as he was throwing in New York, then it's, you know, it's red alert. It's a serious problem. But based on what we've heard so far, it seems like that's unlikely to happen. And I know that he kind of personally laughed it off to some extent, like it's cold and my velocity's always been weird and blah, blah, blah. But it was a big dive. Like it needs to come back to some degree for sure. So that's kind of priority number one. And then it's where you look from there. I mean, this podcast sort of began as an Alek Manoah appreciation project. So it is worth mentioning Manoah here because that outing in the minor leagues was extremely rough. And I know that he said that he felt okay about it afterwards and that it was the results that, you know, it wasn't the results that mattered. That can only be true to some extent. You know what I mean? Like when you're facing your minor league hitters, you still want to be able to get, you know, through two innings, for instance, or not to walk the first four guys you see. Like this type of stuff, because of what we saw from him in his brief spring cameo, which was also not good, and because of the injury concerns associated with him, like prior to the season and even coming in, when people had talked to me about Manoah, I often felt like there was too much pessimism. Like people kind of saw last year go off the rails and kind of closed the book on the guy. And I was the one to say, you know what, you know, this story's probably not over yet. And maybe he's never that guy he was before, but writing him off as someone who can't contribute again is, you know, seems premature to me. And he's still relatively young and he's so accomplished. Talent is there. And there should be ability for him to get something back, contribute, be better than he was last year. And I'm not ruling any of that out just yet. But if, you know, this podcast has moved on. I don't think we have to be firmly in staunch support of him at all times or anything like that. But if there's going to be any optimism about Alek Manoah in 2024, we need to see some kind of positive step. And there just has not been one.
That seems right. Yeah. And I'm not worried about Manoah. And I think you're right. Like he can be a meaningful contributor to a big league rotation, potentially again in the future, maybe sooner than later. But I'm not worried about him because I think I have kind of moved on at this point. And like anything you get from him is gravy at this point, because yeah, it's been a long time since he really felt like, okay, he's coming, and it has been sort of in stops and starts. And, you know, obviously what happened at the end of last year and having, you know, the shoulder being an issue again this year, and then it switches the same thing and you wonder what's going on there. And you know, they say that the velocity was where they'd like it to be. They say a lot of things, but that's encouraging if that's really true, and if they're not just trying to find anything to be positive about that outing. But like you say, it's, you can only take so much from that when you just can't find the strike zone at all. So Yeah, I it would not shock me at all, though, if he went out and had a few good starts in a row and came up and was, you know, maybe not third in Cy Young kind of guy again, but a guy who can go out there and you know, give you meaningful innings for, you know, however many outs an outing. And, you know, we'll see from there. Like, I mean, I think it's obviously worth exploring. I know there's people who are like writing him off doesn't mean in my, you know, in the way I would say he's not going anywhere. They're not, okay, we have to, this has to stop, but they will at some point have to think about, you know, what the strategy is. Is he healthy? Do they need a second opinion or a fifth opinion or whatever it is? Do they need to like really look at that arm and is there something wrong in there or what, or just, you know, give him more rest, build him back up again, and take it as a bigger project. Like that might be where this ends up going if the outings don't continue to, or if they do continue to just look as ugly as this. But yeah, it's a long season. I think that there will be lots of time for Manoah to, if he can stay healthy, get a good run and, you know, see really where he's at. And I don't know if I feel like we do know what he is at this point anymore, because it has been so intermittent that we've seen him, and there have been like bright spots, I suppose, but yeah, it's not great. You don't want to think about it just sort of going away for a guy, but things like that can happen too. I think we're really a long way from that, even though it feels like particularly bleak right now, I'd say.
Like I said before, I think a lot of people have gotten to that point where to them, he's just done. And, you know, if you conceive of the Toronto Blue Jays as a team that has a relatively high floor, but maybe not a massive ceiling, which is sort of, you know, the complaint about the offseason to some degree, he is one of the few players on the team who has a chance to totally blow away projections and expectations. But he does not look even close to doing that right now. Like it's just prior to the year, it was easy to think of a scenario where he came back and out of the fifth starter spot gave you third starter production because he'd kind of screwed everything on right and figured things out and, you know, came back as a slightly diminished but still very useful version of himself, which would have been a really, really good situation for a team that already had a deep rotation, but that is still theoretically on the table, I think, more than people give it credit for. But we have gotten no indication that we're close to having something like that happen. In terms of the bats, again, it's largely a story of who are we concerned about, because there's not a lot of overperformers. Justin Turner deserves some credit for how he's looked early on. I was pretty unabashedly against that deal when it was signed. He looks exactly like the guy you sort of thought he would be. His swing is a bit weird to me. There's like a floatiness to it. And it's not surprising that he doesn't put up the huge Statcast numbers, but he seems to be doing his thing. Outside of him, it's mainly guys that people are not necessarily happy with. When you think about the, you know, whether it's Bichette, whether it's Vladdy, whether it's Kirk. I mean, you could even say Springer after the couple early home runs. You can go down the line. Kiermaier. Most of the time, the situation after this few games, you think, okay, whatever, this guy has not changed my opinion of him, and a bounce back is likely. Is there anyone that you look at on that list and think, what I've seen so far actually makes me concern for what this season will bring?
I mean, my expectations were low for a number of these guys. I must say, I mean, I think these are the two that will resonate with a lot of people. But like Kirk and Varsho really need to be better. You know, I think like the baseline for Vlad and the baseline for Bo, like even if they're not going well, like Vlad, people are like, oh, Vlad's had not a great start, and I don't know, he's hitting about the same as he was last year in terms of like weighted runs created plus, at least the last time I looked, which was not good enough for him, but it was still like, you know, almost 20% better than the league average, right? So like the baseline there is still pretty high. Bo, I don't think I have any worries about. Kiermaier can easily be a fourth outfielder. We talked about this last week, and you know, I don't know what's going on there, but he's not been, I mean, he's hitting everything to the car, but I don't know if that's true. on Monday night. I can't remember, but that's not a guy you expect a ton out of as well. But like Varsho and Kirk to me were kind of the guys who, you know, will like not the most key, but the guys who, if this is a really deep, strong lineup that we hope and think it could be, they have to be pretty big contributors because they don't really have the horses in terms of, you know, your Kiner Falefas and Kiermaiers and, you know, the even farther down. Biggio, I guess, probably deserves a mention there. And Davis Schneider, who's going to start carving out a role, I think, pretty clearly. And yeah, like Kirk just doesn't hit the ball, doesn't strike the ball as well as he ever used to. I know he had a good hit, like an RBI there on Monday night. But, you know, you combine that with the lack of speed on the base paths and it's just... it's tough to watch him not be able to have strike the ball the way that he did. I mentioned a piece yesterday that it was his average exit velocity when he first came up was 95 and only like 20 batted ball events, but this year it's been in like 26 or something like that. It's been, the average has been 85. Like he just is not striking the ball, and it has like steadily gone down each year as that's been measured. Which is a problem, because that sort of was his calling card and why he was an exciting guy when he first, kind of emerged coming out of the lockout season, or the, not the lockout season, the lockdown season, the COVID season. And then Dalton Varsho, you know, it just seems like he's always tinkering. It just seems like, it's proving very, very elusive for him to get back to the kind of guy that he was when he had that success in, I guess, 2022 with Diamondbacks. So would just love to see more signs of life from either of those guys. And they are ones who I kind of, you know, dark horse hoped were primed to break out and primed, and were certainly better than what we saw last year. And nothing so far has made me think that I was correct in thinking that they must be better than they were last year.
Yeah, I would agree with that. In terms of the sort of highest level of concern about a guy being like really, really, really bad, I think that Kiermaier owns that title. Like it does look he looks really hopeless at the plate right now. And there was that notion of him trying to go for a more power first approach. And that invited plenty of skepticism from the beginning and led to a spring where he struck out quite a bit and he had some of those home runs as well, but it would just seemed kind of odd what he was going for considering his skill set. And we've just seen that bleed into the season without any success. Like he doesn't have an extra base hit. So the Blue Jays have plenty of ways to cover for him, and his defense is so good and all that jazz that in terms of from the team's perspective, how much of a concern is him really not performing at the plate? It's not a massive concern, but in, like he's the guy I'm most quote unquote worried about in a sense. But yeah, the other guys, Kirk and Varsho, as we record, like WRC plus in 25 and 26 range, not great. Earlier at the very first couple of games of the season, Kirk was having some strikeout difficulties. If he has strikeout difficulties, he's like absolutely toast offensively, like because he's not hitting for any power whatsoever. And he hasn't walked as much as you'd think early on. Like he's just been a little bit dubious on some of the swing decisions. So again, he really needs to lock in the plate discipline to be useful. I think maybe I feel a little bit more faith in that, but that's me thinking Kirk is returning to the guy he was last year, not the all-star guy. Varsho is the one, you know, I felt pretty bullish about him coming into the season, the way he ended last year, how much of his difficulty seemed to be related to the weirdness of Rogers Center. And he looked really strong in the spring, particularly with his plate discipline. None of the plate discipline stuff is carried over. Just no extra base power right now. It's tough to feel super, super confident. Now, you know, he had rough stretches last year and he bounced back. Like, I don't think it's fair to bury the guy, but my level of optimism for him has definitely shifted downwards from this 11-game stretch here. Before we get out of here, because this podcast has been largely about our concerns, both about the players and the food options, let's end it on a positive note here. Give me a player or a specific thing from the Blue Jays you've seen in this stretch that you've been encouraged by.
I mean, I'm going to go with the crowd, and I think David Schneider, as much as I kind of... I have had a hard time getting as behind the, you know, banging the drum for him to be playing more often, because he does just sort of feel to me like an avatar of like, for people to be like, this is the guy, the people who run this team are morons and bozos, and they're not playing this guy, and the, like, and so I like him, I like his success because it's a slap in the face to the guys who dumbly keep him on the bench all the time. I don't know if I really, maybe that's my misinterpretation, but that's kind of how I feel about some of the love for him, even though there's obviously lots of other reasons, you know, the way he started and the mustache and all that stuff. But I think that there's a hint of that in the folk hero-ness, in the love for him, which, you know, which is fine. I'm fine with sticking it to Ross Atkins at this point. I mean, he's not really making my day-to-day any better this at this point in my life. So I've been a little reluctant on that train. I think you're right. You know, the swings that he put last night were good. And just, I mean, he's the only guy who's really giving them anything, and I know favorable matchups and stuff like that, and you could throw that all out the window when it's, you're looking at him versus IKF, or him versus another start for Kiermaier in center and Varsho in left. I mean, I think I'm okay with Davis swinging and missing, and maybe not having the best of time against some guys who can, you know, really work the high fastball, or places, you know, that are maybe holes in his swing. He's been really good. It's been a fun story. It's been one of the few things that have been fun about this team for the last, you know, year and a half, almost, it feels. So yeah, that's nice. And, you know, if he keeps giving them offense, then that will be enormous, like, meaningful help as well.
Yeah, I think that's fair. He was really impressed from the home opener, key home runs. He's sort of the kind of offensive presence that I don't know if they can't afford not to have on an everyday basis. I don't think it's worth the kind of faux outrage a lot of the time. But, you know, the reality is that their alternatives are not so spectacular that you really need to ensure that Biggio or IKF plays in any given game. And I know Biggio has been strong out of the gate. I'm not trying to rag on him. Am I trying to rag on IKF? Yeah, to an extent.
We got to make that tag for one damn thing.
Oh man, that was a bad whip. And you can see his eyes are just not, like, he's looking at second base. It's like when guys miss the ball and they're like not even looking at the ball. Keep your eye on the ball. I'm going to go with Justin Turner, I referenced before.
Sure.
I think because he hasn't necessarily had a kind of dramatic moments like a Davis Schneider game-winning home run type deal. People may have, I don't know if sleeping, but I don't know if he's getting enough credit for what he's done so far. Like, not only are you talking about an OPS of 959, like, he's normally, when you get guys who are overperforming early in the year, it's easy to chalk it up to some balls falling in and stuff like that. But, you know, he's got a BABIP of 308. If you look at his expected numbers, they're actually better than his real numbers. Like, his expected batting average is 334 compared to 290. His expected slugging is 552. As opposed to 548. We'll see where this goes. We'll see if someone, you know, his age holds up over the course of the season and all that jazz. But like I said before, I came in extremely skeptical about what Turner was going to bring and whether that was the right bat to target. And he has given you everything you could have asked for and more so far. And I will endure lengthy discussions that make me roll my eyes about his veteran presence and him knowing how to win and him teaching everyone else, if it means watching him perform at this level, because he has been fun to watch, which is not something I would have expected.
Yeah, I know, that's a great answer. He has been absolutely fun, and, you know, so was Matt Chapman last April, but we don't need to worry about that right now. It's not difficult to scroll down the lineup and find the two guys who are actually doing really well at the moment.
I will say that I'm not going to ride to the defense of Vladimir Guerrero Jr. slugging 415. Like, they're going to want to see more power output from him. You know, he's hitting 220. I'm not a big batting average guy, but that's not what you want to see from him. I will say that around baseball, and I think we see this early in the season with some level of consistency, often because of weather or whether it's hitters not having their timing down. But the league average for offensive production is down significantly from 2023. So like your league average slash line is 241 average, 318 on base, 387 slugging. Last year was 248, 320, 414. So Vladdy's got a WRC plus right now of 129, which is pretty similar to his 2022. Again, not the high end of what you want to get from him, but perhaps complaints about what he's done thus far could be tamped down a bit, because compared to league average, he's been better than last season, and that's included a sort of strikeout bump that I don't expect to hold up. We've seen the huge home run. We've seen an opposite field home run. I just don't think people should be as discouraged by what they've seen from Vladdy as some of them are, because, like I said, he's performing probably closer to 2022 than 2023 when it comes to against league averages. So that's just something to consider for people who are down on Vladdy. We can leave the podcast there. We appreciate you guys who are listening in with us every week. We'll be back again at the same time next week. That is one of the benefits of our new alignment this season. We're going for a more concrete and predictable schedule. As per always, we appreciate any ratings, any reviews, things of that nature that help boost what we're doing here. And we will be back with you again next week.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.